You're listening to episode 23 of The Gear Heart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or podiobooks.com, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearHeart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on the Gearheart, Wallaby, Buskerton, and Crust explore the possibilities of their newly acquired body, and Jonathan goes against the will of the Council. With his hostility toward his superiors out in the open, how will he manage? Will this impact his chances to save Isabel? Find out on the Gearheart. Isabel was too tired to stay awake anymore. All she could feel was the magic rushing into her chest and pouring over her ailing heart like a torrent of water. It washed away at her cracked core, smoothing the chips and infusing her with the meager life that it could give. It was a jet of light in the surging, sweet darkness, but the numb feeling pressing in upon her was so strangely comfortable. Living seemed like so much pain, when death could be so easy. She didn't give up, though. Isabel began to imagine a room, a glass cavern of carved obsidian, with the torrent of magic flame in the center. Sometimes the room was small and intimate, other times it was like a great concert hall, so spacious that she felt as though she would be sucked upward simply by looking at the ceiling. Thousands of rippling facets coalesced into walls, which sparkled as her bare feet soundlessly traversed the smooth surface of the floor. No chips or cracks sullied any of the plainer edges, and neither were there signs of abrasions or fingerprints. Each edge was impossibly sharp, as though the mirrors contained only one side, thin beyond all spatial reasoning. She heard what she wanted to hear. One moment, a perfect silence. The next moment, the roaring infinity of the magic, like the base of a grand waterfall that swallowed all of the water in the ocean with every second of the day. Other times, familiar whispers hovered in the darkness. A voice would suddenly explode from one of the mirrors like a ray and then fragment into component musical phrases as it broke upon the rocks of the opposing wall. The voices were her mother. The voices were her friends. Cog, Keegan, Augustus, Darren, Jonathan. Isabel often crept to the edge of the room to stare deeply into one of the facets. Within their murky reflections, she found her memories. There were no real events, so to speak, but rather, there were fleeting visions and perceptions. A leaf catching the sun through caterpillar-eaten tunnels in its surface, a lone cumulus cloud sailing across the upper atmosphere, the smoky pattern of marble in her mother's kitchen, a silken dress, the color of goldfish scales. Her favorite memory was a single caramel strand of Jonathan's hair as it blew in front of his smiling hazel eyes. It was for that reason that she would not leave this room. She would stay there until she could see him again. "You gents, what are your names?" asked Jonathan, taking swift, deliberate steps toward Isabel's room. "Queensman Kipton Rochefort," said the one in the front of the group. He was sporting a tremendous blonde handlebar mustache, and his hand held a smooth black bowler hat.
"Pickering," said another.
"Lester," said the third.
"Masser,"
said the last man. "I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to remember any of those," said Jonathan. "I don't even know how your branch is structured, Captain."
"Don't worry about it, sir. You tell us what you want to happen, and we make it happen," replied Rochefort with a toothy smile.
Jonathan stopped. He worried that he might have made a critical error, bringing the Seeker's most elite fighting force along, when he knew that there was a good chance that the Council was stripping him of his powers at that very moment. The Harbinger wondered if somehow all of the Queensmen would know the second that Jonathan was declared a traitor.
"What do you people believe in?" asked Jonathan.
"We've sworn to uphold Seeker law to the very letter, and to fight corruption at every turn," said Rochefort.
"We've sworn our very lives and souls to the Seeress of the Seekers and to the Queen of Gelset."
"Am I corrupt?" asked Jonathan.
"I can't say, sir. I've barely known you."
"Yes, you can," Jonathan interrupted, a fierce tone overtaking his voice. "You know exactly how you feel about me in this very moment. Now all I want to do is get my friends out of here so I can kill Nicholas Antonello. Is that corrupt?"
"I don't think you're corrupt, sir," said Lester. "I don't think you are corrupt if that's all you intend."
"Do you all agree?" asked Jonathan, his rhythmic steps echoing across the marble hall.
"Aye," said they.
There was no pause in their voices.
"Good," said Jonathan as he spun on his heel to face them and clapped his hands together once, wringing them tightly.
"Then we are all agreed. When the Council turns on me, you will be there for my support?"
"I'll commit no seditious acts as long as I have my oath, Harbinger Andrews," said Captain Rochefort.
"Gentlemen," said Jonathan, "as you were once granted your office by the power of Seeress, so are your offices removed. By the power of the rank of Harbinger, I am hereby releasing you from your oaths in the hopes that you will come to your lady's aid even after her demise." Rochefort maintained his composure. The other men exchanged nervous glances. Jonathan continued, "I'm forming a special task force, not under the jurisdiction of the Council. You swear an oath to me and no one else. You would assist me in getting my friends out, that we may destroy Nicholas Antonello. Do you accept?" Rochefort's mustache twitched.
"So it's treason, is it?"
Jonathan met the man's icy stare. "That's about the long and short of it, Captain. Are you in?" Rochefort pressed his mustache down with his thumb and forefingers as he licked his lips. He shifted from one foot to the other and shook out his sleeves. He looked to Pickering, then Lester, then to Massey. Then he folded his arms.
"No," said Captain Rochefort.
That simple word was like a bomb going off in Jonathan's ears.
"What?"
shouted Jonathan.
"Please, Captain, they'll kill us. I need your help."
Rochefort's eyebrow twitched, and he took a menacing step forward.
"Tell it to someone else, boy. I'm not a Queensman anymore, remember? You just released us from our oaths," he said, donning his bowler hat.
"But you said your oath was the problem," said Jonathan.
"Seeress or no Seeress, the Council should be the highest power now, Andrews. I can appreciate what you've been asked to do, and I'll try not to get in your way. But my men and I will not bend knee to some whelp when the Council is about to take control again," said Rochefort.
Then he tipped his hat and said, "Good day." Then the pack of ex-queensmen skulked away, leaving the stunned Harbinger alone in the hall. Jonathan burst into Isabel's hospital room with all the force of a hurricane. Darren leapt to his feet, dropping a book from his lap. Agent Freeman adjusted his glasses nervously.
"Jonathan, what are you doing?"
said Darren.
"I was court-martialed for treason. How's she doing?"
Isabel's body was obviously dying. Her skin had lost its rosy hue, and her gray lips were parched and cracking. Her arms folded on top of her chest like a thin wooden frame, and her chestnut hair turned white at the tips. Her eyes creaked open, and she looked up at Jonathan with milky silver irises. Her lips twitched in the parody of a smile.
Jonathan, get out, growled Darren. I'm not going to have you disturbing Isabel any further.
Darren, you don't understand. I just had the council barristers arrested, and the rest of the council is probably convening right now.
Agent Freeman's jaw dropped.
What?
Jonathan returned a look that told Darren he hadn't misheard. Darren crossed the room to look out the door and into the hallway.
Now you really have to get out, Jonathan. They're going to pass a sentence on you any second, and Isabel can't get caught up in that.
Darren, we're not staying. We have to make it out of here or my visions are going to come true.
She's not moving. Look at her, you fool.
Jonathan balked.
I can't leave her here, Darren.
Not going to leave her with people like this.
Darren stepped almost toe-to-toe with Jonathan and scowled.
Get lost, Jonathan. You don't even know if your visions are legitimate, or even what the scope is. You don't know where they come from, and you don't know if you can trust the source. I'm not going to have you sentence Isabel to death just because you've destroyed all of your inroads with the Seekers, and I'm certainly not going to die helping you.
Jonathan stepped back, a look of horror in his eyes.
Darren continued,
Don't look at me like that, Jonathan. You're not taking us down with you.
Agent Freeman then adjusted his collar and popped his knuckles.
You're going to leave before I make you leave.
Isabel's reedy voice scratched through the room in a tiny whisper.
Wyland, stop. I want to see Jonathan.
The name Wyland pierced Jonathan's heart like a bullet, but Darren was unfazed. Jonathan felt as though he was watching himself, stunned as Agent Freeman turned and put a hand on Isabel's forehead in a calming motion. Jonathan didn't even register the movement as his right hand reached out and grabbed Darren's collar. The Harbinger barely felt the pain as his left knuckles crashed into Darren's right eye and Agent Freeman tumbled to the ground, pulling a vase with him. Jonathan knelt over Darren and pinned his arms to the ground. When Jonathan came to his senses, his fury burned in his chest and he longed for power. He reached back behind his head, beckoning to the great sword of Auden Slade, begging his ancestor to take his body. Fear and shock were the only things that appeared on Darren's face.
Do it, Slade, breathed Jonathan. Give me your power.
Darren's eyes widened as it dawned upon the black-haired agent what the Harbinger wanted. He squirmed and struggled, and to Jonathan's surprise, Darren got a hand free. Jonathan's vision flashed as Darren's fist struck his chin. Jonathan stumbled backward, but managed to regain his footing by using a wall shelf to pull himself up. The black-bearded agent was upon Jonathan in a heartbeat with a right cross that sent the Harbinger reeling. Jonathan accidentally pulled down the shelf, along with several fragile medical apparatuses, and the devices crashed against the ground. Jonathan felt his eyebrows swelling and the world spun. He began again to beg for power, and then something finally responded. Auden Slade was laughing. This time, it was Darren kneeling over Jonathan, and he hoisted the dazed Harbinger's face to his own by Jonathan's collar. Darren clocked Jonathan so hard that the defeated man's head thumped against the tile floor like a pumpkin.
So you wanted to call upon Slade to kill me, eh? Said Darren, hissing through gnashing teeth. Jonathan, in the years that I've walked the earth, I've done some terrifying things. Don't you think I could deal with you?
Wyland, stop,
said Isabel, but her pleas did not disturb the men on the floor. Outside, Jonathan could hear the nurses and orderlies scrambling to call the guards. He didn't see how anyone could get there fast enough to stop Darren from doing whatever he was about to do. Jonathan also came to another sickening realization. Auden Slade would not fight Wyland the Younger. So deep was his hatred of Cog that Slade viewed Wyland as a friend, simply because the Magus had made Cog suffer so deeply. Jonathan was surrounded by enemies, inside and out.
So, you are Wyland the Younger then,
said Jonathan, his head lolling back.
Guess it's over then. You gonna kill me?
That all depends on how strong you are, Jonathan. Even with Slade, it's going to take you a while to recover from this, said Darren, and he began to trace one of his meticulous sigils. Without warning, Jonathan kicked out, not at Darren's face, but at the agent's hand as it neared completion of the glyph. Its integrity compromised, the magic buckled and ruptured, spilling Darren's power into the room in an emerald flash. Jonathan planted his shoe on Darren's chest and heaved, throwing the agent into the hallway outside. Darren rolled over and clambered to his feet as the shouts of burly orderlies echoed from down the hall. This was Jonathan's chance.
I'm being attacked! He shouted.
Darren's wide-eyed glance down the hall told Jonathan that there were a lot of people coming. The agent straightened himself up and shot Jonathan the dirtiest look he had seen in a long time. Then Darren bolted away from the scene. Within seconds, there were nurses and orderlies swarming the scene, checking the tubes and wires running in and out of Isabel's body. Doctors and magi then approached, trying to ascertain if there was any damage to Isabel. Her barely conscious lips whispered that she was all right, and that she would like to be alone with Jonathan. The doctors didn't leave immediately, but once they were satisfied that there was no present danger to Isabel's hospice care, they granted her wish. By the time that it was just Jonathan and Isabel in the room, she was so exhausted by the ordeal that she could scarcely keep her eyes open. Isabel turned her hand, palm up, in the bed, and Jonathan looked down at it, then into her gray eyes. She couldn't reach out to the harbinger, but she wiggled her fingers a bit to indicate that she wanted him to hold her hand. Jonathan put his hand in Isabel's, and he could feel the cool, dry skin against his own. For the first time, it dawned on Jonathan that no matter what happened, Isabel might never leave that room again.
I'm so sorry, Izzy, said Jonathan, feeling his swelling cheek squeeze a tear out of his right eye. I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have fought him. I'm sorry.
Why would you want to kill Darren, Jonathan?
The expression on her face was strange. It bore a sort of detached curiosity, as though she placed no real weight on the answer, as if it was meaningless now. Jonathan wanted to rebut that he had no intention of killing Darren. He wanted to be offended that it was even suggested. But Isabel wasn't wrong. In that brief moment that Jonathan spent out of his mind, Jonathan's will had been entirely directed toward destroying Agent Freeman.
He hurt Cog, Isabel.
Isabel managed to get her eyes all the way open. The deepening rings around her hollowing eye sockets seemed to drape the gray irises like curtains.
What did he do?
He's the one that made her what she is. He's the one that changed her from a girl to a killer.
I thought that was her father,
said Isabel.
I thought so too. It turns out that her father convinced her,
Jonathan began, but choked on the word a bit.
Her lover. To help him change her.
Darren was Cog's lover, is he? Isabel turned her head to look at the window, and the cold winter light spilled across her features. Her pale cheekbones cast long, sad shadows across her face, and her hand tightened about Jonathan's ever so slightly.
I'm glad,
she began. Jonathan didn't understand, but he pulled a seat to him with his free hand and sat down at Isabel's bedside. He reached up and caressed her forehead, softly tracing the line of her brow and brushing across her now coarse hairline. He would have thought a comment like, I'm glad, would have infuriated him. But he was calm. More than anything, he was curious to her meaning. She smiled, and the skin underneath her eyes crinkled. For a moment, some of her shine came back.
I'm glad,
she said.
I'm glad that we don't have to deal with things like that. I'm glad that we are who we are, Jonathan.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Isabel rolled weakly back to face him, and there was something different in her expression. It was almost as though she wasn't sick anymore.
I mean that you should be here with me right now, not off in the distant past,
she said. Jonathan leaned over her and touched his forehead to hers, willing his warmth into her. He took her hand and pressed it against his cheek, holding on to it as though it was her entire body. Okay.
Jonathan,
began Isabel, but finished her sentence with a tilt of the head and a simple kiss, resting her lips upon his. Jonathan took in the surprise and the pleasure of the contact in one brief moment, feeling her skin seem to warm beneath him. He had always remembered Isabel's scent as a mixture of apple blossoms and sweet wildflowers, but that was gone. All of her scents were strangely missing, even the natural smells of hair and sweat. Her skin was smooth, though, and he took in the entirety of the kiss. Jonathan had never seen this side of Isabel. The Isabel he knew was a rock-skipping, dandelion-picking, roaring fire of a girl who played tricks on the other boys. The Isabel he knew pretended to be a diplomat, a member of high society, while discreetly scraping off caviar from toast into the bushes at parties. The Isabel who held his hand now was not a girl at all. She was not a friend by any stretch. She was a woman. What did this mean for his future? How was he supposed to just leave her here and run off to fight the hangman? What about the fact that Isabel was still a seeker? After his stunt in the council chambers, Jonathan wouldn't be surprised if they put out a kill-on-sight order against him. How was he supposed to see her again? And for some reason, Jonathan found himself thinking of Cog's hurt eyes as the snowflakes brushed her face. There was never a time when Jonathan was without Isabel, though. She had always stood by him, and he had no doubt that she would seek him out again once she was well. Maybe they could see this thing through when they met again. Jonathan just needed to get out of her way and let Darren do his job. He felt so stupid for fighting. It was so petty when he hadn't even bothered to ask Darren for his motives. With a sigh, Isabel's head rested back on her pillow, and Jonathan's lips parted from hers, inviting the cool air onto their slicked surface. She closed her eyes and smiled sweetly. A strange sort of wonder filled Jonathan as he stared down at her. Isabel, I don't know how I feel about you yet, but I want to, he said, never letting go of her hand. I really do. Jonathan knew that time was short, so he rose to leave. I think I might feel the same way you do. So I need you to do something for me, said the Harbinger, staring down at the resting woman. I need you to survive and find me again. I want you to think of me while I'm gone, okay? The smile never left her face as he placed her hand back onto her bedside. Get better, okay, Izzy? She didn't respond. Izzy? The slow rise and fall of her chest had stopped. Her eyelids lacked the flicker of motion underneath, locked in horrible stillness.
Izzy!
Jonathan screamed.
Izzy, wake up! Izzy!
He couldn't hear his own voice, just the pain in his throat as he cried over and over again for help. He took Isabel by the shoulders, but he didn't want to shake her. He was so scared that what he was doing was going to hurt her, or that his intervention was going to kill her in her fragile state. He knew that she was dying. He knew that in a moment, Isabel Carricker would be gone.
Darren, get in here!
Came Jonathan's parched calls, but Agent Freeman did not appear.
Darren, please! I'm sorry! Please just help me in here!
For some reason, though, they were alone. Jonathan knew that he was screaming, but no one came. Through burning eyes, he turned to look at the door. There were three men in Queensman-cut suits, staring sternly.
Initiate Jonathan Andrews, said the front man. By will of the council, you've been found guilty of high treason.
Fine!
Shouted Jonathan through bleary eyes.
Of course! I'll do whatever you say, just help Isabel! We can sort out my situation later!
Will you stand down? Asked the Queensman.
Are you going to help Isabel?
Initiate Andrews, perhaps you did not hear the charge. You've been found guilty, and the Queensman went on to repeat the source of his authority in the situation. But Jonathan couldn't hear him over the shock.
Agent Isabel Carricker is a Seeker, you son of a... Are you just gonna let her die? Aren't you supposed to protect the Seekers?
The leader of the three Queensmen straightened his jacket sleeves and affixed Jonathan with a terrifyingly solid gaze. We're only here for you, Initiate. You will stand down, or there will be consequences. Jonathan knew that in that moment he was a failure. He reached out to the Queensman's humanity, searching for it with pleading eyes. He was prepared to be executed on the spot if they would simply help Isabel. He would give anything for them to understand, to make them see that they were killing her.
Don't do this. You don't need to do this, said Jonathan, taking a small step back.
Initiate Jonathan Andrews, came the Queensman's official voice. You have chosen to ignore the laws of the Seekers of the Knights Arcane, and you give us no choice. Then all three Queensmen removed their jackets and tossed them to the ground. Andrews, began the front man, dead or alive, you're coming with us.
Under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org. The beautiful vocals featured in this episode were courtesy of Starla Hutchin of The Dreamer's Thread. Visit her novel at thedreamersthreadnovel.com.